In case you missed it, last week was quite the week in the menopause world. The FDA made a landmark decision to remove all black box warnings from estrogen products and to update the labels of individual products. I was in the room where it all happened, and in this episode, I'm going to break it all down for you. But I'm going to start with the headline. This label change is overall a good thing, a very good thing. I'm Dr. Lauren Stryker, a gynecologist, best-selling author, and a nationally recognized menopause expert. When it comes to menopause, midlife, and what comes after, I'm betting you've not gotten a lot of information from your own doctor. If women are given good information, they'll make good choices. And I'm here to give you the inside information. As this is a monumental event in the menopause world, the transcript of this podcast is available on my Substack page, drstryker.substack.com, along with additional photos and graphics. So check it out. And the theme of this podcast is what goes around comes around. Many think that Premarin was the beginning of the estrogen story, but commercial ventures to replace estrogen and eliminate hot flashes began long before then. But most were unsuccessful until 1942, when Ahearst launched Premarin, the first estrogen to be FDA approved for relief of menopausal symptoms. Now, Premarin was advertised as being, quote, completely natural. Sound familiar? A 1948 Reader's Digest article titled New Help for Women's Change of Life read, "The melancholy sickness that blights the happiness of some women at their change of life can be controlled by female hormones. Yet most women have gone on suffering. But now at last they are ready to transfigure the stormy afternoon of life into a time of serenity and vigor." Now, direct-to-consumer marketing didn't exist until 1985. So medical advertisements at that time were directed at physicians and appeared only in medical journals. In the 1960s, Wyeth launched a campaign showing that glamorous, happy women took Premarin, which in turn resulted in happy husbands. And it's no surprise that ads would be directed towards the guys, seeing as in the 60s, pretty much every gynecologist was a man. So here's a typical ad to convince gynecologists to prescribe estrogen for their patients. Quote, "The physician who puts a woman on Premarin when she's suffering in the menopause usually makes her pleasant to live with once again. It's no easy thing for a man to take the stings and barbs of business life, then to come home to the turmoil of a woman going through the change of life, if she's not on Premarin, that is. But have her begin estrogen replacement therapy with Premarin, and she is a happy woman again, something for which husbands are grateful." Not surprisingly, my physician father put my mother on Premarin. But things didn't really take off until Dr. Robert Wilson, the Suzanne Summers of the 1960s, wrote Feminine Forever, a book which promised a fountain of sexual, mental, and physical youth to women who treated the disease of menopause with estrogen therapy. This bestseller stated on its cover that every woman, regardless of age, can safely live a full sex life for her entire life. I know you're going to be shocked to hear that this book was secretly funded by Wyeth, the company that by then was making Premarin. It was a brilliant direct-to-consumer marketing campaign in a time when there was no direct-to-consumer marketing. By the late 1960s, the estrogen boom was in full swing and prescriptions soared. Despite the claims of Feminine Forever, estrogen was originally intended for, and in fact has only ever been FDA approved specifically for the treatment of hot flashes and vaginal dryness. But in the 1980s, studies suggested that in addition to helping with bothersome symptoms, postmenopause hormone therapy was also beneficial in preventing heart problems, osteoporosis, and Alzheimer's disease. As a result, the American College of Physicians and other organizations recommended that hormone therapy be used by all menopausal women to reduce the risk, even if they did not have hot flashes. So in the 1990s, we thought we had it figured out. Not only would estrogen eliminate hot flashes, but it was also a longevity drug. Sound familiar? Sales continued to rise so much that by the year 2000, one of five postmenopause women were taking hormone therapy. 2 years later, the results of the Women's Health Initiative, a large study initiated in 1997 to definitively determine whether long-term hormone therapy could prevent heart disease and prolong life, in addition to controlling postmenopausal symptoms, was released. On July 22, 2002, women all over the United States woke up to the news that the hormone therapy their doctors had enthusiastically recommended was in fact dangerous, increased the risk of breast cancer, increased the risk of blood clots, and increased the risk of stroke, and should be discontinued immediately. Millions of hormone pills were flushed down the toilet in anger and fear, and women started to call their gynecologist's office, frantically looking for information and some reassurance that they were not going to drop dead from the hormones that had been prescribed. Now, unlike most doctors who were blindsided by this information, I was doing a lot of media and had received a press release and the results of the Women's Health Initiative days in advance. So I was prepared, not just to do multiple media appearances, but to answer my patients' questions. So I prepped my staff and printed out a fact sheet for my patients, emphasizing that 97.5% of women taking hormone therapy had no problems, and that the number of women who used estrogen and had complications was actually small. And the WHI showed that for every 10,000 women per year who use estrogen and progesterone, compared to the women who were not taking hormones or were taking estrogen alone, there were 7 additional heart attacks, 8 additional strokes, 8 additional breast cancers, 18 additional blood clots. And as an aside, there were fewer colorectal cancers and hip fractures. Most important, in the hormone therapy group, there were no additional deaths. No additional deaths. Now, there were a number of issues with the design of the study that skewed the data, actually made it worse than it was, including that the average age of women in the study was 63. And since women generally enter menopause between the ages of 50 and 55, which represented only 10% of the study population, the overall results were not reflective of most women who were taking hormone therapy. And a reevaluation of the study looking only at the women in the 50 to 60-year-old range showed very reassuring results. There was a decrease in coronary heart disease, fractures, and overall mortality. The increase in blood clots was very small. There was no increase in breast cancer in the estrogen-only group, only a decrease. And overall, total mortality in the 50 to 59-year-old estrogen group was 30% lower than in women who did not take hormone therapy. The increase in breast cancer became the primary thing to stoke fear, but again, the risk was actually minimal. Only 8 additional breast cancers for every 10,000 women that took estrogen and progestogen together. And in women who did develop breast cancer while taking hormone therapy, their risk of dying from that breast cancer was 40% lower than women who developed breast cancer and were not taking hormone therapy. So it's now clear that the very small increase that's sometimes seen in breast cancer in women who take hormone therapy was due to the synthetic progestogen used in the WHI study, Provera. It was never the estrogen. And in fact, conjugated equine estrogens appeared to be protective. And to just further make the point that hormone therapy is not responsible for breast cancer, the rates of breast cancer after the WHI was released and estrogen usage plummeted haven't decreased. Rates in the last 20 years have increased. But no matter, the media has continued to scream that hormone therapy causes breast cancer. And this is the important part, though. The purpose of the WHI was to determine if routine use of long-term hormone therapy could prevent heart disease and prolong life, in addition to controlling postmenopausal symptoms. And what the WHI taught us is that while taking combined hormone therapy did not decrease the risk of heart disease, the risk of taking hormone therapy, particularly in young women, 50 to 60, was quite low. So the message from the media should never have been that women shouldn't take estrogen. The message should have been that they shouldn't take it in the absence of hot flashes as a longevity drug. Bottom line, the results of the WHI were really quite reassuring. It was the messaging on the part of the media that was problematic and has continued to be problematic. And contrary to what you might have heard, the WHI was never debunked. It was the inappropriate messaging that had been debunked. Which brings me to the issue of the black box warning. Most drugs list possible side effects as part of the regular insert that comes with every prescription drug. A black box warning is different. A black box warning is intended to alert prescribing clinicians and patients there's a risk of death or serious injury associated with the product. Death or serious injury. Since the release of the WHI, a black box warning is found on all estrogen products, alerting that the user is at risk of cardiovascular disease, heart attack, stroke, blood clots, breast cancer, and dementia. But all estrogen products are not the same. Systemic estrogens are used to treat symptoms such as hot flashes, night sweats, and for bone health. Some systemic estrogens are oral, a pill. Some are transdermal, meaning absorbed through the skin using a patch, gel, spray, or cream. There's also a systemic vaginal ring. Local vaginal estrogen or topical estrogens are placed in the vagina or on the vulva to treat vaginal and vulvar dryness, painful penetrative sex, and bladder symptoms such as urinary urgency or recurrent urinary tract infections, genital urinary syndrome, or menopause. And this includes creams, inserts, suppositories, or a vaginal ring. There's minimal systemic absorption. So different routes of delivery, different doses, different purposes, and different risks. Yet currently, the exact same black box warning can be found on every single estrogen product. So why? Why is the same label on all these products? Class labeling. FDA class labeling requires all products containing the same ingredient to have the same warning, even if that issue has never been demonstrated in that product. Breast cancer is only increased if conjugated estrogens are prescribed with Provera, yet that warning appears on all systemic estrogen labels. An increase in dementia was only seen in women who started estrogen after age 60, yet it's on every label. An increase in blood clots and liver problems, only a potential risk in oral estrogens, but it's also on the transdermal estrogen insert. You get the idea. Each systemic product has nuances, including different risks, yet they all carry the same label with the same warnings. Every single one of the warnings on local vaginal estrogen labels is based on the risks associated with systemic oral estrogen. Not one single complication listed on the package insert has ever been shown to result from using vaginal estrogen. On the contrary, there are multiple scientific studies that confirm that the use of local vaginal estrogen does not increase the risk of blood clots, cancer, or dementia. Vaginal estrogen is one of the safest drugs that exists. I mean, remember, the WHI taught us that for most women, systemic estrogen is not only effective, but also safe. But the FDA required black box warning that practically has a skull and crossbones on it makes you wonder if it's really worth getting dementia, heart disease, or a stroke in order to get rid of your hot flashes. Ditto. Who wants to risk a blood clot or breast cancer to have pain-free sex, a decent orgasm, and a bladder that behaves? I cannot tell you the number of my patients that have walked out the door with a prescription for a local vaginal estrogen product only to be told by a helpful friend, colleague, or their manicurist that using a vaginal estrogen product shouldn't be used if there's a personal or family history of breast cancer. Even many clinicians refuse to prescribe vaginal estrogen cream because of the black box warning, except nothing on that local vaginal estrogen black box warning is true. The fear of both local and systemic estrogen after the release of the WHI was initially because of the messaging by the media, but has continued to be reinforced by a terrifying and misleading FDA-mandated label. As a result, women stopped using estrogen and doctors stopped prescribing it. Not all doctors. I continued to recommend estrogen hormone therapy for women who I thought would benefit and were at low risk of having problems. Now, just to back up, at that time, my interest was minimally invasive surgery, which meant that I was doing a lot of hysterectomies, including sometimes ovary removal. And I was prescribing estrogen postoperatively on a regular basis. We're talking post-WHI. So I had to spend a lot of time explaining the data. But once I did, most of my patients were on board with taking hormone therapy to alleviate their menopausal symptoms. You know, give women good information and they'll make good choices. The real problem was that their friends, relatives, and other doctors were horrified that they were taking that poison and advised them to stop. I had more than one internist call me and yell at me for prescribing estrogen to his patient. When I wrote my first book, The Essential Guide to Hysterectomy, I had an entire chapter explaining the WHI, why it was safe and appropriate to give someone estrogen, particularly if they had no uterus and they didn't need to take Provera. The Essential Guide to Hysterectomy was first published in 2004, when estrogen hysteria was at its peak. So I went back and looked at what I wrote. And it was interesting. After making the case for taking estrogen in the event of a surgical menopause, at the end of the chapter, this is what I said, quote, "The problem is peer pressure. Wherever you turn, whichever friend you confide in seems horrified at the risk you're taking, even if they know nothing about your particular circumstances. It's always interesting how the friend who chides you for your risky behavior may be taking herbs or compounded hormones for which there's no available safety or efficacy information. She may even have a few truly high-risk habits of her own. It's not unusual that a friend who says you're putting yourself at risk for heart disease, and that's why she stopped her estrogen, is also the friend who smokes, is 50 pounds overweight, and hasn't exercised in weeks." I went on to say, "If you don't feel like defending yourself, don't bother. You don't need to justify to the immediate world your decision to do what you realize is right for you. Let it be your secret and keep your friends guessing why you sleep great, have a phenomenal sex life, and have a little smile all the time. Let them think it's the black cohosh and soy." I still can't believe I wrote that. And that passage was removed in the second edition of The Essential Guide to Hysterectomy. The topic was too controversial, and my publisher was not comfortable with me encouraging people to lie about their estrogen use. But like me, most of my academic colleagues also continue to prescribe hormone therapy. So now when many of the new menopause experts, particularly on social media, act like they were the ones to discover that estrogen was safe and we were the idiots who denied our patients, it's kind of funny, especially when they say that everyone should take a bioidentical because it's the safest. But I digress. And in a Substack post I titled, "Is Bioidentical Always Best?" I explain why bioidentical hormones should not always be first-line treatments. And the link to that is in the program notes. The other consequence of the panic surrounding the use of hormone therapy was the rise of compounded hormone products. Women who were fearful of commercial estrogen products turned to non-FDA-approved bioidentical products originally promoted by Suzanne Summers. I mean, think about this. A multi-billion dollar industry was launched by an actress and supported by women desperate to feel better. And who can blame them? Their own doctors weren't helping them. And since compounded products did not require the FDA-mandated warning label, women assumed they were safer. And for me, that culminated in my appearance on the Oprah Winfrey Show, defending the use of commercial hormone therapy against Suzanne Summers and a hostile audience. Definitely one of my more interesting media experiences. And you can see that episode on my website, drstryker.com. Lots more behind that story, but saving it for another day. But the bottom line is, for the last 20 years, the relatively few women who did fill their estrogen prescriptions took it as a last resort at the lowest dose for the shortest period of time. And if they weren't nervous before they read the black box warning, they were nervous once they did, reinforced by their other doctors, friends, and media. And here we are in 2025, and millions of women are suffering with hot flashes, vaginal dryness, and insomnia, and millions of women are at increased risk of osteoporosis because of the belief propagated by the media and many doctors that they're putting themselves at significant risk if they take hormone therapy. I know the number of women who use hormone therapy is currently higher than it was immediately post-WHI, somewhere in the neighborhood of probably about 6-7%, but accurate statistics are difficult to come by because of the large numbers of undocumented prescriptions written for non-FDA-approved compounded hormone therapy. All right, so now that I've given you all this background, let me get to last week's announcement. And I'm going to approach this in four parts. One, is it medically appropriate to remove the black box from local vaginal estrogen products? Two, is it medically appropriate to move the black box label from systemic estrogen products? And then, fair warning, I'm going to talk about politics and get into the inaccurate messaging during the FDA press conference, and then address the politics of why this administration chose to make these changes without transparency or the benefit of a scientific committee, and how that's potentially going to impact future FDA actions. So for those of you who say I should just stick to medicine, that's the point when you should stop listening. For everyone else who appreciates that now more than ever, party politics determines what happens medically and impacts the health of our nation, then keep listening. All right. So starting with the medical. Number one, is it medically appropriate to remove the black box warning from local vaginal estrogen products? This one is easy. It never should have been there in the first place. It was there because of class labeling. Nothing on that local estrogen label is true. Up to 80% of postmenopause women in this country have genital urinary syndrome of menopause, resulting in recurrent urinary tract infections, urinary urgency, vulvar and vaginal irritation, and painful sexual activity. And despite the availability of multiple local vaginal estrogen products that dramatically reduce or eliminate every one of those symptoms, less than 10% of women are treated. And one reason, not the only reason, but one reason this condition is so undertreated is because of the incorrect and misleading information on the product label. This is not controversial. I'm aware of no legitimate menopause expert who believes that the current label is appropriate or necessary. Multiple scientific groups, including the Menopause Society, have advocated for over a decade to get that warning removed. And I think I can speak for my colleagues that we are all thrilled to see the black box warning disappear. Local vaginal estrogen products are safe for every woman, and these products are so safe that they really should be over the counter. This is a massive win for women. Number two, is it medically appropriate to remove the black box label from systemic estrogen products? Yes. I mean, again, a black box warning indicates a very high level of risk. 98% of women have no problems. Does there need to be warnings about risks and adverse events? Of course, but it can be part of the regular label. It doesn't need to be a black box warning. Also, the warnings need to be product specific. And while they did not say so at the press conference, it appears, based on a subsequent meeting with physicians, that their intention is to do just that. And the new labels will indicate appropriate warnings specific to that product, such that oral estrogens will have a warning that says there's an increased risk of blood clots, and that the initiation of hormone therapy is best within 10 years of menopause onset or before 60 years of age. Okay, so then let's move on to the messaging at that PR event. The messaging on local vaginal estrogen was actually spot on. Dr. Rachel Rubin did a wonderful job explaining the benefits of local vaginal estrogen to treat recurrent urinary tract infections, urgency, and other aspects of genital urinary syndrome of menopause. She outlined the repercussions of the black box warning in terms of being a barrier to the treatment of those preventable problems. But before Dr. Rubin made her comments, we first got to hear from our Secretary of Health and Human Services, RFK Jr. He said, quote, "For the first time in a generation, the FDA is standing with science and standing with women." Okay, that was a cringeworthy start. Revoking reproductive rights and defunding women's cancer research hardly stands with women. He also kept referring to the fact that they were following gold standard science. More on that in a bit. And things got even more problematic when the Commissioner of Food and Drugs, the FDA, Marty Makary, took the podium. I mean, yes, we all agree that systemic estrogen gets rid of hot flashes. We all appreciate that persistent hot flashes are associated with cardiovascular disease, insomnia, and other serious medical conditions. We all agree that systemic estrogen is good for bone health. But his messaging went way beyond that. And he clearly suggested multiple times and in multiple ways that taking hormone therapy is the primary way to reduce heart disease and Alzheimer's disease. And women who don't take hormone therapy are doomed to die a premature death and live a miserable postmenopause life, including increasing the risk of divorce. Now you know why I started this entire podcast with a reminder that this is not the first time taking estrogen has been promoted as a fountain of youth, a longevity drug. I mean, the reaction on social media following the press conference was anger and despair that they had been denied hormones and now they're doomed. I mean, sound familiar? It was the same kind of anger and despair I heard when the WHI results were announced and women felt they'd been inappropriately prescribed hormone therapy. And most of the posts that I saw were questions about starting hormone therapy in the 60s and 70s and whether that would save them. What's the scientific truth? Well, the scientific truth is it's individual. Many women benefit from taking hormone therapy and it's usually safe to do so. But it's not true that every woman needs to take estrogen to live a long, healthy life. And the most accurate thing that Dr. McCary said is that the government should stop being our doctor, because this should be a shared decision discussion between a woman and her personal clinician who knows her medical history, her symptoms, and her goals. Did I mention there was no scientific panel behind this decision? I go into details of that in episode 181, the FDA Roundtable on Menopausal Hormone Therapy, and why I declined to participate. But if there had been a scientific panel, they would have made it clear that there is currently no study that proves that it's appropriate to take estrogen for primary prevention of cardiovascular disease and cognitive decline in the absence of hot flashes. But this administration is not about evidence-based science, which brings me to my fourth issue, the politics of why this administration chose to make these changes without transparency or the benefit of a scientific committee. I mean, one would think that Dr. Marty Markary and RFK Jr. removed the label from local estrogen because scientifically it makes sense to do so. But this FDA and Department of Health and Human Services have proven again and again that they do not rely on rigorous science to make medical decisions. I mean, they fired almost all the legitimate scientists and expert panels, and solid science has established that acetaminophen, Tylenol, does not cause autism. Vaccines are not dangerous, raw milk is not better for you, and fluoride in the water is helpful, not harmful. Antidepressants are not linked to school shootings. High-dose vitamin A to treat measles is unproven and potentially harmful. There have been massive cuts of funding and staff for programs in infectious disease detection and environmental health research. I could go on. Gold standard science? Hardly. This administration has been on the wrong side of science too many times to count. So why should you believe them when they tell you that estrogen is safe? You shouldn't, but you can believe me and other experts in this space. So what's the problem? What's really going on? Well, this administration has been extremely problematic when it comes to health in general, and specifically women's health. They've taken away reproductive rights, jeopardizing the health and lives of countless women. They've defunded medical research, including cancer research. And there are many of us that believe that this FDA has another agenda beyond benefiting women to push this estrogen label change. This administration has stated in writing that they are planning to undertake a review of mifepristone, a drug that's commonly used to induce abortion, and for many women in highly restricted states, their only option to safely terminate an early pregnancy. More than 100 scientific studies have confirmed that the pills are safe and effective, including when they're prescribed virtually and mailed to patients. My concern, and the concern of others, is that a review by their hand-picked anti-choice, quote, experts for something that does not need to be reviewed could support their agenda to restrict access to mifepristone so that it can no longer be prescribed virtually or mailed to patients. Removing the estrogen warning label is an easy win to distract from all of the other assaults on health. Give women their estrogen so they can have better sex and their bladders will behave and they'll be happy. And to further this message, they staged a massive PR event to announce the label change. Hundreds of doctors were invited to fill the room for the anticipated announcement. Central Casting contacted all participants to make sure we were wearing the right costume, our white doctor coats. They wanted to make it clear that the entire hall was filled with real doctors. Never mind that doctors wearing their white coat outside of the hospital or office is like ballerinas wearing their tutus when they take the bus. They did make one error in staging their political theater. The media event took place in the Great Hall of the Hubert Humphrey Building. Inscribed on a wall in that building is a quote from Hubert Humphrey, who said, "The moral test of a government is how that government treats those who are in the dawn of life, the children, the twilight of life, the elderly, and the shadows of life, the sick, the needy, and the handicapped." Well, we know how this government treats the children, defunding research for childhood cancer, revoking SNAP benefits, traumatizing children with ICE raids when their parents are picking them up or dropping them off at school, and locking them up in deportation facilities that are unsafe and unsanitary. We know how this government treats the elderly, Medicare cuts, the dissolution of the Administration for Community Living, ACL, and the ACL is responsible for administrating programs and services under the Older Americans Act, which provides vital support to seniors. Huge cuts in defunding of programs that research chronic diseases that primarily affect older folks, such as dementia and diabetes. And we know how this government treats the sick, the needy, and the handicapped, with Medicaid cuts, SNAP cuts, and expiration of the Affordable Care Act tax credits, which will make insurance prohibitively expensive. So yes, the recommendation to remove the black box warning is scientifically solid and a huge win for women. But don't let this win distract from the rest of this administration's health agenda, which is causing egregious, irreversible, and cruel harm to the people of the United States. And let me finish with this. 2 days after the WHI was released, I was still doing TV interviews. My last interview of the day was on PBS. The interviewer, Elizabeth Brackett, had sweat dripping down her back. Her face and neck were bright red. She had clearly abruptly stopped her estrogen. She looked at me and angrily said, "Don't you feel guilty for giving all those women estrogen?" This was live TV, and I wasn't expecting that. But I calmly looked at her and said, "No. As physicians, we follow the science, and sometimes that science changes, we learn new things, and our recommendations change. And as far as I'm concerned, that statement still rings true. Currently, science tells us that estrogen is safe for most women and that many women will benefit from systemic hormone therapy, especially those with persistent hot flashes. But science also tells us, and this may change, but right now, science also tells us that not every woman needs to take hormone therapy to live a long, healthy life, and that if someone doesn't take it, they are not doomed to a premature death, divorce, and misery. And I am very glad that there will now be appropriate product labels so that women are not frightened away from using products that will ultimately benefit them. Give women good information, and they'll make good choices.